The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Spodersky.
Sup?
Hey.
Hello.
How was your week?
It's okay. It's been getting worse.
It was good. Like 4 days in,
I was
going to
say, you said this
14 hours ago.
Yesterday,
it was amazing.
This morning, like, you know, the week was very, very thin for sci-fi news, science fiction news, until
and then
last
yesterday.
24
and then some things
hours.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
I actually was writing up. I always wait until 5 a.m. to write my like weekly roundup story. Because that's, you know, I never know what's going to pop. Like, I'll have a couple ideas, but I just wake up at 5 a.m. and I write it.
Yeah.
And I woke up this morning and looked at the, and I was like, oh, good thing. Because half the things I'm going to be talking about, like, just happened.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk about Solo a little bit. We're going to talk about Bill and Ted 3, Predator, and also we are going to address The Expanse a little bit insofar as we can. Anyway, we do a thing at the top of every show where we talk about things that we're personally geeking out about. We've done it for about 2.5 years. Adam, should we continue doing it?
I guess so.
Okay, cool.
Why not?
Karima.
Wait, you ask Adam and then you ask
well,
me.
Well, he's the boss. I got to ask his permission every week. That's how it works.
Okay.
You see.
So what won my week?
Yes.
What actually won my week is I got to, first of all, for all of you Shadowhunters fans out there, on Freeform, you're going to love this. I got a chance to interview Catherine McNamara, who plays the star of the show, who plays Clary Frey, a Shadowhunter. It's on Freeform. And I have watched the show. I've kept up with the show, but I can't watch it live all the time because my life is crazy. So I was not aware of the fandom around it because I have never live tweeted it. Well, I now know. So first of all, the interview, she's lovely. She's a great actress, great person, really adorable. You know, some people look good on Instagram and then you meet them in person. You're like, okay, wow, that didn't translate, but she's gorgeous. She does not have that problem. For those of you who don't know, Shadowhunters is actually about Clary Frey. She's a girl who on her 18th birthday discovers that she comes from a long line of Shadowhunters, which are basically people who are part human, part angel, and have the ability to fight demonic forces. So demons and elves and vampires and such. So basically, from there, the show was kind of like part angel, part supernatural, part telenovela, because everything happens to this girl. She falls in love with a guy, and then it turns out the guy might be her brother, but is he really? But he's not a brother. Then he dies, she brings him back, and then is he back, or is he a demon? You know what I mean? So it's like crazy.
That old story.
Yeah, that old story. It's based on a set of books called The Mortal Instruments by Cassandra Clare, and it's basically Freeform's number one show right now, which I found out after I posted a picture of her and myself on Twitter and had basically 800 people follow me almost within 4 hours. And I also posted one on Instagram and people
have
been like,
can I get a pic right now with you?
It wasn't me, just me. And no. I know it wasn't me because there's tons of people who would tweet, responded to the tweet like, oh my God, Kat, you're so beautiful. I'm like, I'm in the picture too.
Karen, but you're so beautiful. And then he was fired.
Exactly. And the show also boasts one of the most popular gay couples in the genre, Magnus Bane, played by Harry Shum Jr. and Alec Lightwood, played by Matthew Daddario, and they're just the cutest, and they also have the longest running stable relationship in the show. And they're also, if you're looking for information on them, affectionately known as Malik. So yeah, that has been your Shadowhunters update. Basically, the season finale is a two-parter. Starts next week on Tuesday. I believe my interview with Catherine will be up before then. If not, please, Sci-Fi, finish it quickly, because these people will throttle me if it's not. But yeah, that's kind of what won my week, because I found a new fandom and they're kind of amazing.
Cool. And next up on the Freeform podcast, I'll speak about my favorite Freeform show, The Bold Type.
Oh, right. See, I don't know.
True fact. That is my favorite show on Freeform.
I have not watched that one.
It's really good.
They have one of my most anticipated shows as well.
Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
I was a Cloak and Dagger comics fan. So.
I'm going to jump into Siren. I've been thinking about it for a while.
Siren's really good, too.
Maybe I'll watch it when I'm on my trip. I got to get on the plane and go to Vegas, so maybe I'll watch some weird mermaid smut.
It's not smut.
I'm sure there's got to be some. Come on. I'm sure. You don't bring a mermaid on without a little bit of smut.
But there's multiple mermaids.
That's how it works.
I do know there's multiple mermaids that I am aware of. But anyway, The Bold Type. What's that about?
That's not a sci-fi show, so we're not going to talk about that. Oh. But it's a good show.
Okay.
The end. Anyway, hey, Adam.
Yeah.
What's winning your week?
This thing on Freeform that I saw.
Oh, is it called The Bold
Type? No, I'm just kidding.
I love that show.
I want to give a non-genre shout out. I just woke up this morning to some very sad news about a singer from a band that I very much enjoy called Frightened Rabbit, who committed suicide.
Oh, no.
Couple days ago, I guess he went missing, and they just have confirmed that he's dead. So pouring one out. If there are any Frightened Rabbit fans out there, I'm with you. Yeah, really a band that helped me through some really tough times. But that is not the purpose of this podcast.
And that's also not one year well one in your week.
I mean, it's definitely not winning my week. Okay. That lost my week in a major way. Okay. What's winning my week? I guess BattleTech is winning my week.
Oh,
the new game from Harebrained Schemes and Paradox Interactive, which is my favorite kind of game, the giant dork that I am, which is a tactical strategy game with a grand strategy overlay, much like XCOM. I can see everyone's eyes just drooping shut here.
Nope.
It reminds me that if ever I became so independently wealthy, like I want to be like Elon Musk rich and just buy you a robo suit, just like a giant mech and give it to you.
No, and it's based on the FASA, tabletop gaming system where it's set in the so far in the future, and people fight with giant robots that they pilot around, which is basically like my spirit animal.
What would you do with the mech? Like, honestly and truthfully, you get a mech, what would you do with it? You seem like a peaceful guy, but I don't know. Can I trust you?
Yes.
This is a test.
Yes, I would use it for large-scale infrastructure construction.
And if giant monster showed up.
Yeah, if you have to defend something, I will. But this game is really, really good. It's if you're a fan of the XCOM franchise, especially the recent ones that have come out, it is much along those lines, except with giant robots instead of soldiers. And it's a little more interesting in that it's in XCOM and other games like that. Basically, it was very easy to get on a losing path if you failed at one battle. And I think what BattleTech has done really well is make it so that's not the case. And sometimes it does make more sense to retreat because it'll cost you more. You might win, but it'll cost you so much money to repair your mechs that at the end of the day, you would have been better off bugging out. And I think that that is something that makes it much more interesting strategically. So, BattleTech. That's me.
Cool.
And that's it. And that's what we're geeking out about this week. So moving on. this is just a thing we're going to do every week. And people are never going to get tired of that gag.
They won't.
Never, sure.
They won't.
Ever.
Never.
Arrested Development narrator voice. They were.
Yes.
Yeah. Danny, what's winning your week this week?
Well, five people still listening. What is winning my week? Oh, I watched, for work, I was watching an old TV movie, an old Incredible Hulk TV movie called The Trial of the Incredible Hulk.
With Bill Bixby?
Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. It was during those days.
Tell me that's the one with Thor.
That is not the one with Thor. The one with Thor is called The Incredible Hulk Returns.
Wait, The Trial, is that the one with Daredevil?
It is.
Yes.
Oh, who played Daredevil?
Why would you ask me a question that I don't have an immediate answer to?
I'm going
to
look it up.
You look it up and then you can answer it yourself.
I remember that very clearly. I will tell you,
I know who plays the Kingpin. It's John Rhys-Davies.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
It's really, I was not expecting anything from it and I actually ended up really liking it.
Yeah,
I thought it was really, really solid, and the woman who sort of ostensibly plays a bit of a pseudo damsel because it was still like a 80s.
It was that time.
It was, I mean, I hate to say that, but you know, was she played this character named Ardra in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and I recognized her immediately. And I was really embarrassed. I believe the episode is called The Price. I believe it is a season 4 episode. So if you watch The Price, you should also watch The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, and if you then vice versa.
Yeah.
But it's really good. Yeah, I was kind of shocked by it. I really had no expectations. I assumed that they would all be not good because sort of notably those are don't have the same pedigree that the series itself had, because the executive producer from that was not involved with the movies. So, yeah, I believe that's Ken Johnson. But, yeah, anyway. Yeah.
I remember that, and I remember the Thor one very clearly, those two TV movies.
The Thor one is fun. The Daredevil one is, like, I would argue, like, actual good.
Rex Smith played Daredevil.
Cool.
There you go.
Now we know, and knowing is half the battle.
Yo, Joe.
There you go. Wait, where's Joe? He wasn't here the whole time. He was a ghost the whole time, Adam. Anyway, so that's what's winning our week. Now we can talk about, what do you want to do, Predator?
Sure, let's talk about the Predator. The Predator.
The Predator in the suburbs is what I'm dubbing this trailer.
Yes. Yeah. So Predator movies, there's the first one, and then there's the rest.
I disagree with you, actually.
It's really interesting because the thing is that like the sequels don't really have a lot of don't get a lot of respect.
They don't. I go to bat for Predator 2.
Okay. But absolutely. would you go to bat for 2010's Predators?
I've never seen 2010's Predators, honestly.
Okay.
I kind of quit after Alien versus Predator. Yeah.
The thing is that like they just aren't a lot of them, and the way that Alien keeps getting movies is just not like Predators never got that kind of love.
Yeah.
So this sort of feels like an opportunity. This is Shane Black doing it. And then what's his face, Decker, who is the guy that created Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps.
Black and Decker is his name.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Good guy. Good job. Anyway, so it's kind of got like a cool list of credits there. Yeah. And then you've got Olivia Munn in the movie, and Sterling K. Brown, I feel like, is kind of a standout because, you know, he's like a golden boy.
Keegan-Michael Key is in it, right?
Yes, yeah. Keegan-Michael Key is in it. So, like, it's kind of like an interesting group of people, and the story
and the star was Pierce from Logan.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. What's his name? Yeah.
And the thing is,
what's Boyd something.
I don't know what the situation was going to be, but what I find very notable is that this trailer dropped elsewhere and then had such positive buzz that people were chomping at the bit to finally see it online.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if they ended up rushing it a little bit sooner or whether or not this was something they were going to put a lot of marketing money behind or what.
Yeah.
I mean, one assumes, you know, if you have the director of Iron Man 3, like, you're going to at least put a little muscle, but yeah, I mean, like, people were really excited because they were hearing good things, and now it is out in the world. And mm-hmm. what was your response to it, Adam?
Mixed. Definitely a mixed response. I mean, there's the first two Predator movies, which, again, I will go to bat for Predator 2, have the grit to them and that no Predator movie since then has had. And I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's just the film grain for all I know, but it, like, something seems like dirty and gritty and not polished and rough about them, and I don't get that from the footage that we saw here.
And that's what you know about Adam's fetishes.
That's right. And then the other thing I don't love is that they drop the word they're hybridizing. They're trying to hybridize. They're going,
wait, like Jurassic Park?
I guess. And I think what they mean is that the predators are doing this. The predators are going around to different planets and trying to create hybrid creatures for some reason. I couldn't tell whether it was that or that, like, the U.S. military is trying to create hybrid soldiers or something. But, like, I am so tired of hybridizing. Like, that is the go-to. I feel like that is the go-to thing for science fiction movies now. And even things I love, like, you know, The Expanse,
genetic
we're going to talk
editing.
About later. You know, it's
genetic
very,
editing, not hybridizing.
Genetic editing.
Yeah, you know, and it's just like enough already. It's enough that there are these, and it's tough. That's the thing is, like, with Aliens, you've kind of had the same situation where you've got this great creature and you tell a great couple of stories, and then you're kind of out of, you know, we did Alien and we did Aliens. One Alien, lots of Aliens, now what? And I feel like with Predator,
Aliens versus
and with Predator, I feel like they're trying to do that too. It's like we've got this great setup of these creatures that hunt humans, you know, from outer space, and trying to take come up with new places to take that story has proven a challenge. So, you know, the suburban environment is new, and that's interesting. And I'm a big Shane Black fan. I actually love Iron Man 3. It's probably my second favorite Marvel movie.
Wow.
Which I know makes me unusual in that regard, but...
No, there are people that really loved it. It made a lot of money. I just didn't, and therefore your opinion's bad.
That's right. But he's a good director, and he's a good action director.
Honestly, in terms of directing it, I didn't have a problem. I had problems with that script. So,
anyway.
But yeah.
But ultimately, like, I'm a fan. So I remain... optimistically curious rather than curiously optimistic.
Yeah, that was something. It was kind of funny, like watching that trailer with the suburbs and the kid with the ship that he's sort of flying around with his hands. It felt very 1980s, didn't it?
It felt like
Predator
things.
By way of Stranger Things. Yes, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah,
but that was definitely what jumped at me.
But not 1980s, and it's just you can tell like there's a rawness to the Predator movie. I mean, like you got Jesse Ventura like being a racist asshole, you know, on that show and in that movie, and you know he gets it. Everybody, you know, so it's not like they're advocating for it, but it's just it's a different. It was a different vibe back then. You could be a little. I feel like you could be a little meaner edged than they're going to be in this movie. Rated R? Did they say what it's rated R?
I have not looked. Yeah. I mean, it could be. It looked fine as a trailer. It's a teaser. They don't really show a lot.
It isn't. Wait, hang on. Yes, it is R-rated.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that's interesting, too, is that they set up in the first two movies that predators are drawn to areas where there's conflict.
Right, that's not why, like a conflict.
Yeah, in Predator 2, they come to Los Angeles, because in the Los Angeles of Predator 2, it's like gang warfare openly with the police, and that's all going on. And here, it's just kind of like they're showing up, I guess, because they get paged, which is...
That's exactly what
Yeah. Predator's like, true. Predator's like, new phone, who dis?
It's exactly...
Wow.
Wait, can we please? I need a meme that says that right now.
Yeah.
New phone. Who it is.
So
I'm done.
You know, and the whole point being that they hunt dangerous prey. You know, they hunt Arnold and his soldiers because they are dangerous and they are a challenge. And they hunt Danny Glover because he's dangerous in the Predator 2. Is the kid in the suburbs really like a dangerous prey? And in fact, in Predator 2, the Predator spares somebody's life because it's a woman who's pregnant. And he sees that she's pregnant. And so, like, would a Predator go?
People,
why would a Predator go after a kid in the first place? I don't know. I'm sure it's all going to be explained. I mean, this is a trailer.
Is it because he's a hybrid and he's confused?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, this is a trailer, a teaser even. It's not even a full trailer, so who knows. But these are the questions that it raises in my mind.
Yeah, I mean Sterling K. Brown's in it, so I'll probably watch it.
No, that's
solid
what I'm
cast.
Saying. The casting look.
I think it's Boyd Holbrook, by the way, is his name.
Thank you.
Who plays? Yeah.
Because isn't he related to Hal Holbrook?
I don't know, but he was really good in Logan.
He was excellent.
He took a part that could have been really dumb and made it really good. So yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, it looks good. It's not a lot to go on,
right.
But it's out. And I think what was interesting is that like it just had a lot more push behind it suddenly.
I want to hear about from the hardcore Predator fans.
Yeah, that's a good
question.
Please
comment and tell us what you think, because I'm a mild Predator fan.
We need the Shadow Hunters level
that's
Predator
what I'm saying.
Fans.
Exactly.
I feel like where they messed up, they really should have done a period piece with Predator. Because the whole Predator 2 sets that up very clearly, where he's in the Predator ship and you see that, you know, there's like stuff from, I think, the Middle Ages and stuff from Revolutionary War era America and stuff where the Predators have been coming here forever. You set that up. Show me, show me somebody fighting the Predator who's only got a musket, you know, and a sword, you know.
What is this, the Family Feud? You're like, show me musket.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly, it's the Predator feud. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, that's a really interesting story because this is, again, a bunch of soldiers. In the environment's different, but the setup and the stakes aren't necessarily different. And I think that's how you could really make this interesting. If it were me, but with all these successful movie franchises I've helmed, you'd be surprised to know that they haven't asked me to helm this one. So I don't know. It's weird, but...
Mind blowing.
But yeah.
Hard to believe.
That's what I would do.
Well, here's the thing. It sounds to me like what you're saying is you want to do a little bit of time traveling with those Predators. And so in that spirit...
That was a stretch.
Listen, it's the best I could do on
I'll
such short
it.
Notice.
I'll take it.
We're going to talk about another franchise that's returning after a while.
You know what I think he needs? I think he needs some candy. I think you need some
M&M's.
Oh, I need some M&M's. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe
that's
the one
true.
With the espresso. I'll wake you right
up. No, I don't want that. I'm telling you, I want the mint. Mint will do the job just fine. But Bill and Ted.
Yes.
Coming back. Bill and Ted 3, Face the Music, has been sort of in the background.
Is it, or did John Wick just get high?
Wow.
Like, what is actually happening there?
No, it's coming back, baby. Listen, I'm very excited because they've been saying they wanted to do it for a really long time. Like, and to the point that I was like, it's never going to happen. They're just going to keep running their mouths about it until everybody's dead and it's going to be too late. But now it's going to happen for real. Bill and Ted 3, Face the Music, where the timeline that they thought they were going to get doesn't really happen, and now they and their daughters have to travel in time to find a way to create the perfect song and then somehow usher in this utopian society. And I am very relieved to hear the daughter element. I think that that is critical to its success, and I think it's great. I'm really excited not to just like go ahead and like steal everybody else's thunder and say how people should feel, but I'm stoked. How do you feel about it?
Are you high? No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say I was excited, but now I'm not going to because you
okay.
said it. No, I think it is excellent.
Wow.
Yeah.
If the movie does the same thing it did before and does not take itself seriously and is just as goofy, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I hope it's a grim, dark reboot of the Bill and Ted mythos.
No, I'm serious, because sometimes, you know, some of the remakes, they try and take themselves, like, I don't know.
Are you guys Bogus Journey fans?
I am.
I love Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it is non-heinous.
That is absolutely true.
Apparently, it's the opposite of heinous.
Yeah.
It is, is in fact, Station.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, that movie is so good.
It's hilarious.
Have you seen, Karen, have you seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
I have seen parts of it on a coast-to-coast flight.
It's so good.
It is time for a rewatch. I feel as though we have let you up to fall a very far distance because it's not as good as that. But
it was like your Thor experience.
Yes.
Like, I know I saw this. Yeah. Wait, why don't I remember that part? Yeah. Because I think I slept through part of it because I was on a plane.
I just, they like, spoilers, they go to hell at one point and they're like trying to get in touch. They're like, the devil is there and they're like, how do we get his attention? Sign of the devil, dude.
Yeah, it's, and then you start going like, it's
hey,
and it just plays with the conventions that they set up in the first one really well. And yeah, there's just
it's
so
funny,
much about
and it's,
it.
It's so interesting.
And William Sadler plays death and is hilarious in
get
that movie.
Get down with your bad self.
That's right.
It's so good.
You may be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper. That's his verse in their last song at the end.
Very good.
Yeah.
And he plays the bass, a stand-up bass.
That's right.
I love that movie very much. I like that it is their take on like Dante's
Inferno.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, this is so weird. I can't believe that they're going to do this, but then they did. It really, like, when I was younger, I thought it didn't hold up. And now as an older person, I watch it and I'm like, it's not better than the original. Like, the first one is like a great movie, and the second one is just so bizarre that you watch it, and it's so rare to get a movie of that type. I've seen very few movies that can touch it in the way that it's just so inventive and strange, and you think, how did it happen? How did this get made?
Now, the real question is how they're going to retcon the ending, because the ending of the movie...
Oh, is it like, the band is successful?
Yeah, they go travel through time and then they come back and Bill's got a long beard.
I think they're literally just going to say like, oh, well, I mean, I don't know if they have to.
Because they play God Gave Rock and Roll to You by Gene Simmons and it gets broadcast all over the world. And that's ostensibly supposed to be the beginning of like the Wild Stallions' rise to fame and unification.
Well, I think
of
that
world
what
society.
They'll do is they'll let that. I think that will probably exist, and I just don't think that they'll include all the post-credit stuff, because on the post-credits, they have all of these like magazines and newspapers and all that kind of stuff. So they could do that. I mean, they could potentially not count Bogus Journey. I don't know what they're going to do.
Count Bogus Journey?
I know.
You guys should see Adam's face.
That would be so sad.
Well, I don't know what they're going to do yet. I just like that. I know there's a script out there. I know that Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are both on board. I know they both have been on board for years about it. It's so nice that they're buds.
Yeah.
It's so like, it's like such a nice
and I will
feeling.
I will be happy to see Keanu having a good time in a movie again. I know everybody's big on the John Wick. And, he shoots a lot of people in the head, but I want like I want Ted
you
Theodore
want him to
Logan.
Talk like this.
Yeah, exactly. Goofy Keanu.
Just come on and be like, hey.
Yeah. No more sad Keanu.
Yeah.
Happy Keanu.
Like the next time,
every time he says sad Keanu, all I can see is Key and Peele with the cat.
Oh.
But anyway, but here's the thing. Have you guys thought about like how this movie came about? I've thought about that. Like, were they like having drinks or something? Like, dude, we should do this again. Like, think we get the band back together?
No, they've been begging.
They've been talking about this
for like a decade. Yeah. Like, they've really wanted it for a long, 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 long time.
So it wasn't more one than the other. Okay.
No, they both were really.
That's like kind of the nice thing about it is that you'd think that like it would be like Alex Winter would be like, man, I'm really trying to get my star back on the top.
Right,
but
yeah.
No, Keanu Reeves was like, if I have the time, I'll do this.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just became about all of the complicated issues of Hollywood. And it's just, now it's going to occur. Here's my...
Sounds like Jason Momoa and The Crow.
Yeah. Give me your wish list. Is there something that you really want from this movie?
Wow. I just am really curious what they're going to do with the characters of the daughters. Because I think that there's definitely like an angle of playing them as like the opposites. You know, Bill and Ted are these slacker. They're still like, whoa, dude, you know, and everything. Their daughters are like the type A people and having that play off of each other. But I'm really curious about that relationship and how they handle it.
I have, as always, the solution to this problem. But it's based on I have like a very serious pitch. This is like, I know what my Bill and Ted movie, what I always wanted it to be. So first of all, my number one wish that I'm not going to get, but whatever, it's fine. Is that I want one of those daughters to be, trans. I just want one. They don't both have to be, but one. That would be great. Or like some kind of queer, but I would really like one trans daughter.
You said
would
some
be
kind of queer. I'm mad.
Like
here.
Something. I want that. And what I want from them is that they feel sort of disaffected because they're still being taught the same rote, the same, it's like the same textbook. And they feel like they're getting all of like these stories that are faces from history that are not familiar to them, that they don't feel connected to. And that's why they're so disaffected. And then when they go back in time, it's a story about like figures from history that they can relate with, the ones that aren't necessarily in the history book, and it gives them a reason to care about history, and it's a reason for like there to be a bonding story and like to sort of help maybe understand why it is why these two older white dudes have not succeeded in saving the world. You know, I mean, like there's a lot you can do. There's a lot, and I know these are socially conscious guys, both of them, in real life. And I feel like there's a great story you could tell. I know that is taking a serious approach.
Yeah.
But well, I think you could still do it in a way that's fun and silly. Like
you you could also do it some way in like an estranged type of way. Like the daughter, one of the daughters like a successful like lawyer or something like that, and like just looks down on her dad or whatever, and then something in the movie brings them together.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of a question of how old they're going to be.
Yeah.
Like, are they in high school? Is it like sort of a similar thing? Because like I was thinking about this because we did a retrospective about Bill and Ted,
would they logically be? How old if we're?
I mean, the thing is, it could be anything.
I mean, it's been over 20 years since Bogus Journey came out, right?
I guess at that point. The thing is that like you don't know like what. They can fudge the years,
right?
You know what I'm saying? So like, I don't know how old those kids are going to be. Like, yes. At the end of Bogus Journey, they do both have babies at that point, correct?
Okay.
I'm not misremembering
that's technically how many years ago?
It's like 1992.
Right. So these
or
could
91.
Be grown women.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it depends. It really depends on like whether or not they at any point in time actually said that it was 1991 in that movie. They could fudge the timeline a little bit and have it so that they're still teenagers. They could do it.
Yeah.
It's not something that they can go one way or the other. It's interesting to me. I'm jazzed about it, I guess is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I've wanted it for years and I'm glad that it's happening. And I really like those two guys. I can't help it. I love Alex Winter and Freaked. It's one of my favorite weird horror comedies, and I like Keanu Reeves in many things, and they both just seem like stand-up guys. I follow Alex Winter on Twitter, and he just is like a really decent stand-up dude.
I mean, the really interesting thing will be who ends up behind the camera, who ends up writing it,
etc.
Well, it is the writers. It's the original writers.
Oh, it is the original writers.
Oh, that's
who ends
good.
Up directing
and the director is the director from Galaxy Quest. So you should feel really good about this.
I do feel really good about that now.
Yeah. Like, there's everything I've heard about it, really, like, I don't want to get myself, like, so up about it, but I am very excited. I am more excited than I want myself to be. I'm so excited.
All right.
So there you go. Anyway.
Party on,
dude.
Yeah.
What about...
That's good news.
It is good news. But wait, there's still... We have like one more thing we can talk about that seems that's kind of like news? Good news. Yeah, there's some Star Wars. There's some Solo A Star Wars Story news.
Or we should, or Childish Landino, as I like to call him.
Wow.
Childish Landino.
That is a part of it.
That's good.
That is a part of it. So they finally had their red carpet. And going
and
in...
And Lando met Lando.
Lando did meet Lando. So the setup is... That Solo, A Star Wars Story, has had a lot of frustration and a bit of a cloud around it because Chris Miller and Phil Lord were on it, like, really far in, and then all of a sudden it was Ron Howard instead, and people have been mad at Kathleen Kennedy post Last Jedi, and, you know, she said some things about not giving a shit about, like...
Fans.
Like angry old white men, like, yelling at clouds about things, and, you know, like, it's just been... This was the movie that I think, like, we had said this when we were talking about, like, the upcoming year, that you, I think you actually said this, Adam, is that none of us brought up Solo.
Right.
As a thing we were looking forward to. And we are not really down on Kathleen Kennedy in that way.
That's correct.
But there are people that, like, want her to crash and burn. And so it feels like that has been the cloud around this movie. And so,
which has nothing to do with the actors or their performances.
Because one of the things that was coming out was that Alden Ehrenreich, they had to hire acting coaches to help him, that his performance was that bad. That was one of the rumors that was coming out around the Phil Lord, Chris Miller departure and everything, is that they, the studio was particularly unhappy with Alden Ehrenreich. Who knows how much truth there was to that? I know that they did bring in acting coaches to help him. But that could have just been part of the whole wanting to evoke Harrison Ford of it. I don't know.
Well,
but,
honestly, I think this is one of those things. And I remember having a similar feeling with Luke Cage, in that sometimes casting, they cast for a look and not necessarily for the acting ability. They kind of like, that'll come.
What are you trying to say?
No, I'm just saying that maybe there's no truth to that. But the other rumor that I have heard since the premiere yesterday is that Danny Glover stole the show.
Danny Glover's in it?
I'm sorry. Wow, Donald Glover. No, actually,
you
know what?
You got me super excited.
It's Predator 2's fault.
It's Predator 2. Yeah, it's Predator 2 that did it. No, Donald Glover steals the show with his mini capes.
Yes. He has, like, the Millennium Falcon has a cape room.
Yes.
And that's kind
of
cool.
And he said he made it a whole thing. He's like, he made it a thing with the character. Like, he's going to have a lot of capes. That's his thing.
Hey, it was him and what's the name of the robot?
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yes, the actress name.
That's not the robot.
So she's the other one.
No, I call that robot.
Oh, okay. Cool. Anyway, she's the other one that's supposedly, like, a really big standout in the movie. But all of this is to say that, A, it felt like a bit of a risk in a way to do the premiere a couple weeks early, because you only do that when you're feeling confident. And
right, because they premiered it before Deadpool. I got confused for a second.
Yeah, because it's not next week. It's the week after that it's going to actually premiere. So, yeah, like, it was a bit surprising. I guess they just said, we're going to come out confident. And, yeah, I mean, the premiere went well. All the buzz coming out of it has been largely positive. Nobody's saying that they rewrote Star Wars and made it, like, this incredible thing. But most people seem to be saying it's a fun heist movie, and it takes about a half an hour to get where it's going. But once it's firing on all cylinders, it's really enjoyable.
L-337. That's the name of the robot.
There you go.
The other thing that I...
Wait, Leet?
Yeah, exactly.
How did I not catch that until now?
I don't know.
Wait.
You're very slow.
Leet speak.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I got it even slower.
The other interesting thing that I've heard coming out of this is, like, the ratio they figured out, like, it's about 30% Lord and Miller, 70% Ron Howard.
Yeah, that is wild.
That is interesting.
Because that means they changed a lot.
Yes. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I said this when they hired Ron Howard. Ron Howard knows how to make a movie, and he knows how to do it on time, and he knows how to do it under budget, or on budget. So... That this would come out
and
as
calm when he does.
Yeah, that this would come out as a solid, fun movie doesn't surprise me, given his pedigree and his directing skill. You know, like, he knows how. That's why they brought him in. Basically, like, we have this movie that's in trouble. You can make it fun. Go for it, dude. And he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw Paul Bettany on the red carpet, and he seemed really jazzed about it. Like, he is feeling confident, and he was really proud to be a part of it. And he's a big Star Wars fan.
Yeah. And he didn't have, you know, 8 hours a day of prosthetics to put on every day. Yeah,
he said he was like, I was in and out in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was like, it was a real relief.
But it's just, I mean, you know, again, it's going to be interesting to see, because I don't think the movie will bomb, but I think it's not going to do as well as...
It's on target to do pretty good, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Man.
It's selling out places.
Huh.
So yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Here's the thing. What's going to happen is a lot of people are going to jump out that first weekend, and then we're going to see.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, its potential is, if it really is like Ocean's 11 in space, and it succeeds at that, then it's got rewatchability. You know, like it's not going to be like, you know, Infinity War, where like maybe you're going to go back and be like, is there something I missed the first time? But it might be just that it's such a fun romp that people will go more than once. And I don't know if Rogue One was that, because Rogue One, again, was like a little bit of a bummer movie. And I don't know like how many times people are going to go back and rewatch Rogue One in a theater.
3 times.
Yeah, but I think you are an exception.
I don't know. I'd be curious.
All right. We'll see. I think that that's where its potential is.
Just because the last act of that movie is so crazy. And that's the other thing, too, is it really, what's going to be that set piece that everybody talks about from Solo? You know, what's going to be that action beat or that moment where everybody's just like, oh, man, remember that moment? Like, it'll be interesting to see what that is and if it exists and whether that'll kind of give the movie a little more legs. I don't know. I'm curious. And it's just, I also wonder if they will make a Lando movie after this, because so many people are so psyched about Donald Glover in this role. And
well, and the rumors are still now like really going about that Obi-Wan thing. Like,
yeah.
That is really, I don't think we actually covered it, but I know that other sites have been covering that there's more movement on that supposedly happening. But yeah, like, I would be down for both of those. I actually think the Obi-Wan one and the Lando one make more sense than a Han Solo one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, this, again, I feel like going into this, the question was, is this going to take Kathleen Kennedy down a peg? And is she going to lose some kind of control that she has had for the last, you know, however many years? And now it is starting to look like the answer to that question is no.
Boy, would that be unfair. Because listen, I know The Last Jedi technically underperformed, but it still made a mountain of money, and The Force Awakens made a ton of money. So,
yes, anything that makes over $2 billion.
Yeah, so to say that she's in trouble just because some people are angry about The Last Jedi,
this has been a question, right, is that what would happen if a Star Wars movie tanked?
Yeah.
What does that mean? And what is the question of expectation? Because, yeah, like, have they mitigated their expectations on Solo? Or are they still sticking with the numbers that they want for it? I have no idea. And, I have just no clue what it's going to mean. If it does badly, will it have an impact on her or not? Certainly, what I'm saying to you is that there are people out there that do want her to be taken down a peg, because they think that she's like arrogant or whatever it is, this perception that people have of Kathleen Kennedy that they, for some strange reason, don't seem to have about Kevin Feige. What a mystery. I wonder what the difference could be.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. I mean, at this point now, I'm like, it's funny. Like, now I want it to succeed. Now yeah. I'm like, do great. Make a lot of money. Screw these people that are like, I want Kathleen Kennedy to fail. Take a nap. Watch a Star Wars movie and be happy. Good grief.
There are also people that want Kevin Feige to fail, too. Trust me.
Yeah.
But I do think, yes, it's that's the vocal minority that are out there yelling about her. And it's also very easy to blame corporate when something tanks. Now, here's the thing. If she's making decisions that are good for the movie, if she makes a great decision, no one says, great job, you're doing amazing.
Catch the error.
I was going to say, they don't say that to any director or any producer.
No.
Well,
it's only when they, you think so?
I think Kevin Feige has that now.
You think he has that now?
Yeah. I think people put a lot of the credit for the success of the MCU on him.
I don't give him credit for Black Panther. I don't. I give that to Ryan Coogler. I give Feige credit for just stepping out of the way and letting Ryan do what he does, and let his team do what he did, do what they do.
Yeah, but then he did that with Taika Waititi too. Like, that's the other thing about Kevin Feige is that he's smart enough to know when to get out of the way of the train.
Now that's really weird though when you bring that up, because a lot of people who didn't like Thor did not blame Feige; they blamed Taika Waititi. They didn't say like, "Why the hell did you hire this dude?"
Right.
So that wasn't. So I think you're right. I think you're right. Feige has now. What is that when you reach that level in the game where you?
I mean, I just think the man is kind of Teflon. You know, it's very hard to make things stick to him. He'd really have to go full John Lasseter.
Well, but I think It would take a string of failures. I mean, that's like honestly, it would just take a string of failures. Even like Iron Man 2 and Thor: Dark World, as lukewarm as they were received, did fine, and there was always another movie coming, and the next movie after that did great. You know, so it's like. Yeah, I just hope that's what I'm saying. Like, if even if Solo were to bomb, which it's not going to at this point, for anyone to look at that and be like, "Well, that's bad news for Kathleen Kennedy." It's like, except for the string of massive successes she has behind her, you know,
Funny. I'll go back and rewatch movies. The last time I rewatched Gremlins, I saw her name and I was like, "Oh, right,
yeah."
She has been attached to things that are great for a long ass time. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for it. I'm glad that the red carpet went well. It was definitely cool seeing Lando meet Lando. That is pretty wild that they both were wearing like that sort of like crushed red velvet kind of thing. Like,
I think they planned it. Their stylist planned that.
Yeah.
That was some double red Versace happening there.
Yeah, it was quality.
But just really quick, if we're going to talk about what people are wearing, the Met Gala, I'm sorry.
Oh.
People looked kind of amazing and otherworldly there too. Just my brief thing. If you haven't had a chance to see some of the costumes that were coming out of there, I need to see those costumes in a Star Wars movie or in a.
My favorite thing was someone took a picture of Chadwick Boseman in his outfit and labeled all the different pieces as if they were magic items from an RPG.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, the pants of speed, and they give you +2 to dexterity.
But
or whatever.
I don't know why no one made an Assassin's Creed thing with him yet, because that looked straight up. Like, you guys have failed. Fandom has failed. I haven't seen the proper memes.
Wow.
Speaking of failed.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Messed up.
That was good, though.
Anyway, I didn't even get to talk about Rihanna. You talk about Met Gala, and that you understand. When is Rihanna going to be in a Star Wars movie? When's that happening?
Right? Oh, my God. Your wife must have been, like, thrilled at those costumes.
Oh, yeah. They were amazing. She was floored. She was floored by the Zendaya one, I think, was her number.
Yeah. Joan of Arc. And she had the hair and everything.
Oh, yeah. It was legit.
Yeah.
Speaking of Rihanna, I just struggled through Valerian on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah.
Saw it a few weeks ago, too.
Oh, see, I liked it.
I saw it a few weeks
ago. It's rough, but she was great. I agree with you. She was great.
Amazing.
I remember, yeah.
She was amazing. I was frustrated that I didn't see the scene that I saw with her in the trailer in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be a lot of that happening. I'm talking about you, Avengers. But I did the same thing. I sat down like, oh, I've never seen this. And I was really excited to see it. And I did the same thing. Like, oh, my God.
And I love Luc Besson. Luc Besson. I love him. And, I honestly thought Cara Delevingne.
She did good.
The dude, though, was the slow
Dane
one for
DeHaan
me.
Dane is not a leading
man.
Yeah.
I felt like just
Keanu
like she saved.
Put Keanu in that role.
Wow.
Well, no, I also felt just like everything, just like she saved him from everything in that movie, that she kind of saved the movie.
I
like the first like 2 minutes of that movie, and I like Rihanna.
The opening sequence.
Those are the best.
Great.
Anyway, okay.
But
so
on a sadder note.
So there were a number of cancellations. The big ones for me up until the thing that happened were Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is my wife and my, that's like our show.
A lot of people really upset
a
about
lot of
that.
There's a possibility that Hulu's going to pick it up. But I
would bet you money they will. They're already making money on it.
I don't care when shows get canceled, and I cried legit tears when that show did. So I will cry tears of joy if they bring it back. I just really love it. And
a lot of people bummed about The Last Man on Earth.
I also, and that was going to say, like, this was the thing I almost ended up talking about at the top. I think The Last Man on Earth is a much more honest post-apocalyptic story than The Walking Dead has ever been. Because I believe that for the most part, if you're going to have most people drop, what's left is probably going to be idiots. A lot of not terribly competent people barely skating by and failing a lot. And so it is a comedy a lot of the time, but like it has some really genuine dramatic moments that I think ring very true and very honest. And it's a show that I wish I could keep watching. And that's Phil Lord and Chris Miller again.
Mm-hmm.
But if you If you never watched it before, even though it got canceled, honestly, here's what I think is going to happen. I think that someone is going to pick up the license for that in comic book form, and you'll see more of it that way.
So isn't Last Man on Earth like I Am Legend without Will Smith, without the dog, and without sense?
It is about Will Forte being an idiot, and the world ends, and he thinks he's completely alone, and then over time he discovers that he's not, and he's a moron, but everybody else, for the most part, that gets brought in is also not terribly bright. Like, he's the dumbest of the lot, but they're all kind of dummies.
So the stupid inherit the earth? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. But there are times in which they really kind of rise above their own lack of intelligence and manage
like
to do things
show.
That are noble. Yeah, the first season I thought was very rough because it's focused on Will Forte's character, Phil Miller, being like a real scumbag. Like, he's really just awful to watch. Like, everybody else is fine, but he just, like, it was very hard to like him. And then they find a way to really connect him and Kristen Schaal at the very end of that season. And once they're a united pair for real on the same team always, the show becomes great. I think that they are there's just such a great relationship between the two of them. And everybody else is very good, too. But I thought that Will Forte and Kristen Schaal are like incredible on that show. Like, I genuinely love them and I'm sad to see it go. But that. I don't know what's going to happen. However, we were aware of a thing that was probably going to happen for a little bit, and then
we didn't know what happened
but
yesterday.
We did not know that news was going to drop of The Expanse being canceled late last night
after season three. Like, season three
after
is going to continue.
Three.
You will be able to see the rest of the season.
But after season three, there will be no more The Expanse on Sci-Fi. And there are reasons for that we can talk about. So let's talk about them.
Sure.
So, fearless leader, tell us what you know.
So, no, I listen, a couple of disclaimers here. Obviously, we are owned by Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi Wire. So, but we are generally editorially independent. So I'm going to be speaking to this as much from an outsider perspective. And that's 100% true because I and none of us in this room are privy to the programming side of the business. It's not our job. You know, we work on the other side. So, you know, I produce, co-produce and am on The Churn, which is the podcast about The Expanse. I'm a big fan of the show. So,
I love it.
And the books as well. So I'm sad to hear this news. The upshot, I mean, the official statements such as we have them are that the deal that Sci-Fi signed for The Expanse back in the day, which I think was like 5 or 6 years ago when they were figuring all this out.
This is with Alcon?
Yes, with Alcon, the production company that makes the show.
Okay.
Restricted Sci-Fi's benefit from it on a financial level to only having to do with linear air, which means people tuning in at 9 o'clock on Wednesdays or whenever the show is airing to watch the show. As we know, in the past 5 to 10 years, the landscape of how people watch television has changed dramatically to the point that especially, and I think especially in our world, you know, the binge watch thing has become much more of a thing. And so people, and this, The Expanse is a very passionate fan base, you know, that people are really into it. But the number of people who are watching it on the air at 9 o'clock on Wednesdays,
it was very low.
Was low, yeah. And was not enough to support for Sci-Fi to continue spending money on this show.
It was even hard to watch online after it aired because I remember I had to pay to watch season two through Amazon, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and this is part of the reason why, honestly, the show has a chance to survive because Alcon is now going to shop it to other people. Sci-Fi doesn't own. Sci-Fi saying we're not doing this anymore doesn't mean the show doesn't exist. It just means Sci-Fi is not airing it. I would say, you know, and I have absolutely no inside knowledge of this, but I would say it's probably a slim chance just because The Expanse is an expensive show. It's a prestige level production in terms of the amount of money they spend on putting it together. And a network is, or, you know, whether it's Netflix or whoever, is going to have to absorb that cost in order to produce this show. So but it's a really hard thing because, again, this is a show with a really passionate fan. I'm one of them. You know, I really love this show and I love talking about it and I love a lot of the things they did with it. But it's one of those situations where it's hard to believe when you are that deep in the fandom that everybody doesn't feel this way, mm-hmm. you know? And it's one of these situations where that was the case. You know, I saw someone...
But it didn't have anything to do with the... I just want to clarify something. Nothing to do with the acting.
No.
Nothing
no,
to do
I
with
think,
any performances yeah, I, or actual, like... it's just the way the show was being measured was on a platform that is now sort of obsolete.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, Sci-Fi had control over streaming rights. Right. We would probably be having a very different conversation right
absolutely.
Now.
Okay. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, honestly, I think any network, Sci-Fi or otherwise, you're going to see a lot different deal making when it comes to production deals now. Because it, I mean, probably started a few years ago already.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. You have to think about platforms as they are, right? Like, I can't talk numbers, but it's like Netflix has a certain amount of money that they have the ability to play with, and there is a certain amount of loss that they can accept. HBO is in a similar position wherein they have got a lot of money to play with. I don't want to blow anybody's mind. Sci-Fi doesn't have that kind of scratch. We just right. don't. Like, right. that's reality. We really wanted this show. We made that deal because we really wanted to have The Expanse. It was a great opportunity, yeah. and it was a thing that lots of people were passionate about within Sci-Fi.
And the other thing to remember is that at the time that this deal was made, it was the deal for... And again, I'm speaking completely as an outsider who just observed this from a journalistic standpoint. The deal for The Expanse was hugely competitive. Hugely. I think HBO was in the game. Other networks were in the game. This was a really in high demand property because the way people were pitching it, and you know, you kind of see this angle, is these guys, James S.A. Corey, Ty and Daniel, had an association with George R.R. Martin. Game of Thrones in space, right? What a elevator pitch that is. And... Yeah, so there was a lot, and would, had that not been the case, would Sci-Fi have made this deal the way they did? I would venture to guess no. You know, I would venture that there was some element of this is a gamble, but it's a gamble that's worthwhile because this is an incredibly in-demand property. And unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, you know, the gamble didn't pay off for them from a numbers standpoint, and it's not, it sucks because... You know, Sci-Fi, for fair or not, has garnered this reputation of being like, we cancel your favorite shows, you know, but no, I would say venture to guess no one at Sci-Fi wanted to cancel The Expanse. No one at Sci-Fi didn't want it to succeed.
No, I mean, I literally, you know, I mean, this is, oh boy, it's always so like cautious. I mean, like, whatever. It came out last night. Did I know that was coming? I sure did. I knew it was going to happen, and like...
Well, the writing had been on... I mean, even... Listen, if you were outside of Sci-Fi, the writing had been on the wall. The ratings for this season were down from last season. Overall, that's public knowledge, you know. And again, it's well known that this is an expensive show to produce. So you put those two things together, there is an error of risk.
But like, there was nobody that I spoke with that had any... opinion other than, gosh, I hope this gets picked up someplace else. Like, that's the thing. Like, nobody's sitting here going, like, gosh, I hope it just dies out there.
Right.
Like, no. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like that.
Right.
No,
like, every person that I've spoken about, knowing that, like, this is a thing that's probably going to come, like, it was, well, I hope that somebody is going to be able to make a different deal wherein it's going to become viable again. Just like, you know, I actually am willing to place money that there are probably lots of people at Fox who feel the same way about Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Right.
Because the thing is, it's not actually a Fox property. That is actually an NBC Universal property.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to air on Fox. And that deal can often say, like, if the ratings are low, it becomes not worth it. So, you know, it becomes a conversation of how do you make a thing financially viable? And there are online platforms to use, or if Brooklyn Nine-Nine came to us, for example, you know, like that stuff can happen. And in the case of The Expanse, it really is like nobody's sitting here going like, good, that show got canceled.
Right.
It's everybody going like, there is probably a way to make this work. And we're all just crossing our fingers that it does.
Right. And the thing is, I think, you know, it's just a shame just as a fan, because one of the things, you know, Game of Thrones, when it started out, was season per book. You know, we're doing book one is season one, book two is season two, whatever. When The Expanse came out, they really stretched things out and kind of spent a lot more time building the world and looking at other stuff. And so you didn't even get through the end of book one until I think the midpoint of season two. And because of that, unfortunately, if the show doesn't get picked up, I can tell you as a reader of the books, there is some really cool stuff coming down the pipe. And I shouldn't say that because it's almost like rubbing salt in the wound. But it's just kind of sad that we won't get the chance to see some of that stuff realized. Who knows? Maybe it will. I don't want to say it won't get picked up because stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
You know, but I think
Netflix push to get that they announced this week that they want to push for more both acquisitions as well as original genre programming.
That's right.
I think that Netflix would be perfect for it, and there's an audience.
Yeah,
we'll see. I just, you know what it is. It's like it happened, and I watched this thing occur online with the people that I know. Being a very upset because, again, most people, I don't want to blow your mind, most people that are writing for Sci-Fi Wire watch sci-fi content. I don't want to surprise anybody.
Well, I never watched Ghost Hunters, but this is like a good space-based sci-fi genre show.
But right now, and The Expanse really was the herald of this, but it's like that, and The Magicians, and Wynonna Earp, and all these other shows that are coming out right now, they're like maybe they don't all fall under the prestige title, but there's a lot of really great original programming that people are fans of right now on sci-fi, and that includes the people that are working for the channel. So I think that, like, you've got people at Sci-Fi Wire who are A, bummed about that, and B, and I just want to be very honest about this and kind, Please don't at people that work at Sci-Fi Wire and be mad.
He's talking about us.
The show is canceled. We are also really sad about it, and we are as upset as you are. Yeah. We do not have control over it.
That's true.
And if we did, Lord knows the outcome would be different.
I mean, I think the real interesting thing too is just it opens up a lot of questions about the viability of this kind of show, and because it was critically hailed, like, it got the same. I would say. Not quite the same level eventually, but the same level of that early Battlestar Galactica got of critical praise in terms of its political depictions and things like that. And that just did not translate into the kind of viewership. And it makes you wonder why. It just makes you wonder, what was it about this show that didn't click in that way from a pure numbers standpoint.
I think it really does, honestly, for the most part, boil down to the way people watch television for the most part.
Yeah,
and that's
true.
Please, by all means, we look forward to hearing your thoughts about The Expanse and about Predator and about Bill and Ted and about Star Wars, the Solo side story. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you are not subscribed to the podcast, please subscribe to Who Won the Week and leave us a review. Please make sure that you're also listening to all of the other beautiful sci-fi podcasts, which include Strong Female Characters, The Churn, which is it going to continue, or are you still going to be going? Do you not have the answer to that question?
TBD.
Okay. So Strong Female Characters.
Hopefully.
And The Fandom Files, for sure. Before we wrap up, where can people find each of you online?
People can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rock the Faces.
And people can find me, Karima, the Blur Girl, TheBlerGurl. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, all the places, but I get mail on Twitter.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.